Okay, this is Judge Buckley. While we're being recorded, I'll thank everyone for making yourselves available. Cottrell, would you please take roll?
Yes. Judge Buckley.
Here.
Ms. Fleming.
Here.
Judge Cope. My apologies.
No offense taken. Here.
Judge Kelly. Judge Thompson.
Here.
Ms. Carter.
Here.
Ms. Eberhardt.
Here.
Mr. Planet. Mr. Planet. Mr. Taniguchi.
Here.
And Mr. Yamasaki.
Here.
Thank you.
Okay, so if everyone could be on mute when you're not speaking and unmute yourself when you are speaking. We do not have the advantage of seeing your lips move, so we're not able to tell you to unmute. Written public comments were not received for this meeting, which has us conclude the public comment portion of the meeting. The purpose of this session is to continue to discuss the allocation methodologies for the $167.8 million funding restoration and the $72.2 million new discretionary funding included in the proposed governor's budget. John Wardlaw is kind enough to be with us today for this discussion as we consider potential options for the allocation or further discussion of it. Mr. Wardlaw can provide insight as to how these options might impact the branch's budget advocacy efforts. There's been some discussion about BCPs and et cetera, and with Mr. Wardlaw, we can get his thoughts as to how or if any of this could impact the advocacy on the budget. So this meeting is to revisit a concept that was discussed during Monday's meeting as to potentially raising up those that are under the average. As everyone saw with an email that was sent after the meeting, that the correct number to the bringing people up would be much lower than the $400 million number that was provided, and in fact is $62.5 million to bring the courts below the statewide average up to the current 74.3% level, though that actually is going to be shown to be even more insightful with the review and the scenarios that were circulated. The recommendation continues to allocate the funds via the workload formula, which is in scenario one. And I'm going to ask Brandy to walk us through both scenarios. But another option has been provided that uses the funding to bring all courts below the statewide average funding level up to the statewide average funding level. So before we open up to discussion, if everyone could have opened up the two scenarios. And Brandy, please, if you could take them one by one, please.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Judge. So I'm starting on page 5 of the material packet. We started off with a walkthrough of the restoration as it would look as applied to the current year workload formula allocation to identify what the new statewide average funding level would be. Again, we have some caveats in the material that indicate that the need does not yet reflect updated filings and other information. But overall, just to help, again, just carry on the conversation from Monday, so we were looking from a 74.3% statewide average funding level to an 80.6% statewide average funding level after the restoration is applied, as it was recommended in Monday's meeting. So moving on to page 6 is scenario one, also as the recommendation from Monday's meeting, where the new $72.2 million discretionary funding is allocated with 50% of that funding going to the courts below the statewide average and the remaining funding allocated to ORTs. So with this scenario, we'll see that the new statewide average funding, column K, the funding that goes to the courts below the statewide average funding level, is about $36 million. And when we move forward again, if I'm going too fast, let me know. As we move forward to page 7 and looking at scenario 2, this is instead of in column Q, instead of taking courts up to this, giving 50% of the funding to the courts below the statewide average, this is bringing courts up to the statewide average funding level of 80.6%. And that's where we get down to a total of $70.9 million estimated to do this. And again, this is a number that was replacing the number provided on Monday that was a little bit higher. So the last attachment B just kind of groups this together to show you a combined view of what scenario 1 and 2 look like. And if we look at the orange section where it talks about courts below the statewide average funding level, you'll see that under scenario 1, we still end up with some mixed percentages of where courts are relative to their funding relative to their need. 81.4% for Butte, going down to yellow, 79.9%. But looking at scenario 2 and what that is meant to achieve is it brings everyone to 80.7%, and it levels that playing field for those courts below the statewide average funding level. So that's really it in a nutshell. We're happy to take any questions from the members.
So this is Judge Buckley. I'm not sure where your thoughts, John, would be best provided. Let me ask if you have any comments now, and then we'll open it up to everyone else. If you'd rather hold off and listen to the discussion or questions and then provide some thoughts, whatever your preference is, John.
Okay. Thank you, Judge Buckley, and thank you for the opportunity to address the subcommittee this afternoon. So with respect to the 72.2 million and the conversations that have unfolded during the legislative budget hearing process, as you all know, on January 8th, the governor unveiled his spending plan. And in that, it articulated the 72.2 million for the purposes of workload tied to previously passed legislation. As we headed into our budget conversations with the legislature via the hearings, I believe it was a question was asked, well, what was the methodology that derived the 72.2 million? And it was based on a consumer price index that mapped exactly to the 3.7% that's identified in the governor's January 8th spending plan. And so the administration went on record in both houses of the legislature with it being a recognition of the costs of doing business, which is different than what was articulated in the governor's initial release of the budget. And because of that, I think we have a lot of discretion as to how we want to utilize this funding. It was the branch through the Judicial Council that said our priority was tied directly to a recognition of cost of doing business through the Consumer Price Index, and that we would like to have an annual incremental adjustment made to the budget that recognizes the true cost escalations year over year that occur. So that was our ask. And because of the way it's wired right now, there is no specific language in the proposed budget that specifies directly how that money needs to be allocated. And I think at the heart of this conversation is a matter of branch priority at this point on whether or not to utilize the discretionary funding for the purpose of equalizing courts, which has been a very long-standing principle of the branch dating back to Waltham, that 5-year period of time where money was distributed more balanced throughout the branch and continues in our workload formula versus a cost of doing business indexing that was the original ask. And so if I were asked, relative to ongoing budget advocacy, I do believe that, in the way in which the administration has built this, it is a ongoing $72.2 million, but doesn't grow in the out years. And our original ask was a recognition of $72 million plus an escalation factor that would continue. And I may be assuming incorrectly, but I believe that the branch is still very interested in that conversation moving forward. And so to the extent that we allocate the money consistent with that initial approach, it, I think, makes the conversation a bit easier because the Department of Finance has gone on record during the hearings that the money is for a recognition of cost of doing business. So kind of the policy hook, if you will, the money being used and distributed consistent with that fashion may be helpful as we, again, approach the administration and ultimately, hopefully, the legislature on something that is just mechanically built into the budget that recognizes the ongoing cost increases. That said, I completely understand the need to bring those courts that are under the average funding level up. That has been a longstanding branch priority. And, I don't think that we would be penalized with either approach. It now becomes a matter for this committee on what is the strategy that it wishes to move forward with. If it is to continue to seek out a consumer price index mechanically in the budget, then it might be prudent to use another method other than workload that addresses the original intent as we put it forward and as the Department of Finance has described it to the legislature during the budget hearings. I'm not advocating for one way or the other. It's really what is the priority of this subcommittee, TICBAC, JBBC, and ultimately the council on the priority of this funding, which was originally for CPI. So I'll stop and see if there are any questions. And again, thank you for the time to address the committee.
So let me open up to anyone and everyone. Any comments, thoughts, questions?
Well, this is Sherry Carter, and you know that I have been proposing equity and funding for the 8 years I've been with the California State Court System. I think we have an opportunity to do that, to bring all the courts that are under the average funding line up to the average funding line, and then we still have people still have courts that are significantly above the average funding line. So this is an opportunity to do what we have always said, which is to bring equity into the funding without hurting the courts above the average funding line. So we finally have an opportunity to do that. I think it would be disastrous for us not to take this opportunity because it's very hard for me to understand how we could look courts like Sacramento in the eye when they are so underfunded, and we would spread new money to courts that are above the average funding line and tell courts that are significantly under that they still have to operate at a huge deficit compared to their workload. I disagree a little bit with what John said in the sense that we'd have to change our approach. I think we are not only consistent by doing this by workload, because it is a workload adjustment. We are recognizing that these courts have state workload and state funding is now going to bring them up to that average funding line. Then when we get CPI in the future, we all rise together. We rise and fall together. So if we have an allocation reduction, we fall together. If we have an increase, we rise together. And now we don't have to start fighting over how we deal with each and every year when we have an allocation reduction because you have courts that are significantly underfunded. So I want to thank the Judicial Council staff for being so creative on finding these alternatives to discuss, because we have never had, in my view, we have never had this opportunity before to bring all of our sister courts up to the average funding line with money that none of us thought we had at the beginning of the year, that none of us were promised we would have at the beginning of the year, that we probably have all prepared for not having, at least we have in Los Angeles, because we still are not counting on it until, you know, the budget is signed. So I just want to commend the Judicial Council staff for preparing these documents, and I am a strong proponent for the approach, and I think that if we don't do it, we've lost the only opportunity I've ever seen to treat every sister court the same, at a minimum, to bring them to the average funding line.
Judge Buckley, this is John Wardloff. I might just clarify. Sherry, I think you make very, very good points, as always, and I think, you know, you have discretion on which way you want to go. It's really a matter of what is the branch priority with regard to equalizing the courts or a cost of doing business decision. And I think you articulate a very good argument on the workload formula. I don't think that that would be contrary to the stated intent in the governor's January 8 budget release, just for complete transparency.
Anyone else?
Yeah, Judge Buckley, this is David Yamasaki, if I may.
Of course.
So, thank you. So the benefit of time obviously gives you the opportunity to take a look at more information, and I think in this instance, I was, full disclosure, the only dissenting vote to the earlier proposal. And today I would say that in looking at all of the information, there would be a unanimous decision today or then with the vote that took place. And I have been dealing with this about the same duration as Sherry has, and I absolutely recognize that there has been a great need for additional funding to be made available to courts that have been identified as woefully underfunded. And this goes back, of course, many years, starting in 2013, where we as a branch looked at our sister courts, brother courts, and recognized that we needed to make some sacrifices in order to bring them upward. And I would say that since that process started, those courts that were towards the bottom of the funding level have been brought up significantly since that time. Conversely, without the benefit of large appropriations of funding, the remedy has been to reduce courts that have been a further distance from the statewide average to closer to the statewide average. And in doing so, courts have had to attrit and downsize the organizations significantly. And, you know, for courts like Orange, Orange currently sits at a funding level a great distance from where it started many years ago. So we have seen pretty significant reductions year after year after year, and such that we have had to make a lot of changes in processes. And again, this is the commitment that we made from the Budget Advisory Committee standpoint as well as the Judicial Council to help strengthen the branch recognition of the deficiencies in funding that we were trying to overcome. But that has not been at a cost, at no cost, because we have been struggling, or many courts have been struggling, to try to meet the responsibilities. And year after year reductions have all obviously been challenging for all of us. And any modest increase or appropriation that we've received is a very welcome and very necessary in order for us to continue to meet the responsibilities. And while I recognize that this may be an opportunity to advance those below the average perhaps faster, it does come at a very significant price for those courts that have been looking at this new funding to be made available to help shore up some of the shortfalls that everybody has been facing. And as I said before, a flat budget is a reduction in the budget in the subsequent year. And as we look at the opportunities to bring those courts below the average closer to the statewide average or the statewide average, I think it's very, very impactful for those courts that would end up seeing very little money in growth. And I think that we've continued to make progress thus far, and I think that it's a model that has been established, I believe that this is something that we should continue to recognize and continue to utilize when these new monies do come in. So I just have a different perspective on this particular subject. Thank you.
Thank you, David. Anyone else?
Judge Thompson.
Yes, please.
I think the equity in courts and the funding to achieve equity, it's a longstanding principle. I think that's different than the cost of doing business. I believe we already have been operating under an approved methodology and strategy that has been approved by TICFAC and the council for funding with respect to new money. It seems to me as though, perhaps with COVID or something else, that the goalposts are moving to advance a certain result that is dependent upon circumstances and or opportunities in time. What I'm concerned about is if we recall what our brother and sister courts had said, is not only was restoration important, but also an ongoing cost of doing business recognition was important. And we surveyed our other courts. What we're doing is, under the alternative approach here, is we're saying, and what I heard Mr. Wardlaw say is, DOF said this is a cost of doing business, but the governor's budget didn't call it a cost of doing business, it was new money. But DOF went on the record as saying a cost of doing business. If for purposes of achieving the equity, if you will, to a average funding level, bringing all those courts below up to that average, I think we need to address the money coming in the future. Since DOF went online as saying this is a cost of doing business, I think we need to address that of that 3.7%, if you will, in the future, that's a cost of doing business to be allocated to each of the courts at that 3.7%. Any new money above that, I think, needs to be addressed as new funding. And if they happen to recognize the CPI, which I heard was not recognized by DOF as being a increasing 3.7, then I think we need to treat that perhaps as new money. I think we need to, if we go this approach, we need to come up with another alternative that recognizes it. And I don't know, and I think it would be, I think in the big picture, from the legislature standpoint, I think it would be acknowledged, appreciated. We are trying to achieve this because I think in the big picture, you're going to recognize some of the backlogs due to COVID are coming out of these counties also, the greater backlogs. My two cents. I was not a dissenter, but it also didn't include the entire $72 million going to bring the courts up. My only question to Mr. Wardlaw would be, is there any difference from going to the legislature, from taking the $72 million or 70 point, let me look at this chart here, 78.98 million from the 167 restoration money versus taking it from the 72.2. I know it's apples and oranges, which really may be a difference without a distinction, but is there potentially going to be seen as something by DOF that would make a difference there?
Thank you, Judge. I appreciate that question. And I don't think so on this particular matter, in that with regard to the 72.2, that conversation, you know, that was represented in the January 8th governor's proposal has really evolved in the conversation with the legislature, because they were a bit confused by, you know, the 3.7%. What does that map to? What is, if it's workload related, then give us more information about which specific bills that line up with the exactly to the number that's been requested. And I think that line of questioning gave finance the opportunity to say, well, it's broader than that. While it would certainly help workload, there is an acknowledgement of a cost of doing business need here. And that's important because it sets up subsequent conversations for more broad requests. Should we want to go back to the table on a request for a permanent indexing, the policy decision that was characterized in the hearings is, I think, an important distinction that we may want to look back to should the judiciary want to push the conversation further about a permanency of CPI as a recognition of a stair step without having to go back and request via BCPs. It'd be built into the budget as we originally proposed in our proposal. And so your question about whether or not, you know, utilizing the 72.2 or equalizing versus the broader budget of restoration, I don't think that we would be criticized either way, quite frankly, with which way we want to go. I think it's really for the subcommittee to identify its priority whether or not that is consistent with the way in which the council initially proposed that request last July before going to the Department of Finance. Judge, I hope I answered your question.
I think you have. My concern long-term is that we don't treat then any cost of doing business then through a WAFM analysis. I think things can get a little muddled in this nature because some of the courts, if you will, who are at it at the average funding level or above, they still have a cost of doing business on an ongoing basis, as do the courts who are below. But this, if we recommend adopting the revised approach. It is, I say revised, option B. It is going to, I don't want it to be a trigger so that all courts don't potentially get that cost of doing business increase in the future and that the money just funds through as new money, which I think is inconsistent with what DOF just went on record as saying, that 3.7.
Okay. Thanks, Judge Thompson. Anyone else?
This is Nancy Eberhardt from San Bernardino.
Yes, Nancy.
Thanks, Judge Buckley. So I also, likewise as everyone else, did a lot of soul searching on this because the chance of losing any future ability to be able to work with the legislature on providing some sort of a year-over-year increase based on CPI or cost of doing business is something that we've been trying to do for a long time, but even longer have we been trying to work with our guiding principle of achieving equity. You know, in 1998, Lockyer Eisenberg was put in place so that we could start to look for some sort of equity on a statewide basis. And I think the pandemic has made it glaringly evident that courts that were less funded during that time were less able to weather the pandemic. And, you know, as I was testifying to the legislature and hearing their questions, it was repeated over and over again, the lack of consistency, the lack of access, the differences in the type of service that was provided depending on what court you went to. And all of that really is because of the inequity in funding that has been systematic within our branch. And so if it is possible for us to do something to get to a more level playing field where we can then answer those questions about how do we measure our work, how do we provide a consistent approach, how do we provide consistent access to our communities, I think that that is important. I think that answers an even longer term ask that we're being questioned about continuously from the other two branches and from our community. You know, the civil attorneys were there at those hearings too and had a lot to say, a lot of self-help organizations. So for those reasons, and because I think that we can never achieve a modern court where we can all provide similar access, I would agree with the proposal to bring underfunded courts up to the state average.
Thanks, Nancy. Anyone else?
Yeah, this is Neil Finagucci.
Yes, Neil.
I thought about this. I think that, you know, what we're doing here, the scenario two is moving away from a policy that we had developed to try to bring more equity among the underfunded and overfunded courts. And I think we need to continue with that policy. I think one of the things about scenario one is that it does both. It provides funding to the underfunded courts, brings you closer to a statewide average. It also provides funding for cost increases for all of the courts. That's the big difference between the two scenarios. And there's one thing I heard from when we were going through all of our priorities for BCP's next year's three, but it still continues to emphasize that they really need money for cost increases. This doesn't do it for me, at least as far as cost increases for everybody, in which case I would support scenario one.
Thanks, Neil. Next, anyone? Okay, with
Judge,
no other,
Buckley, Judge Thompson, can I just jump in real
course.
Quickly? My perspective was the restoration and in the big picture, how I came around to the other side of what, you know, Mr. Taniguchi just said, was the restoration covers your, in my view, more than the 3.7% in cost of ongoing business. It's a restoration. It's kind of built into that restoration, if you will, of funds. Then that's why I said what I said in terms of future years, what concerns me. With that, I'll be quiet.
You don't have to be quiet. If no one else, let me just provide a comment in that why I see this as an opportunity to consider and do scenario two, and that is, and it's tied a little bit to what Judge Thompson said, but with that restoration money, I think it would be different if we were told that we were going to get a cut in year one, and then in the same year, we're told we did not have to take that cut. What in fact happened, as everyone definitely knows, is that in 2021, we took this cut of $162 million, and we all adjusted and dealt with it. And so in now year two, in 21-22, we are seeing a noticeable increase. It's restoration money, and I don't want to refer to it as a quote-unquote new money, but the reality is that in budgeting and actually living through that in 2021, we are seeing an increase, and it can go to increase of costs and so forth. And whether it would be that we're facing a budget increase of $230 million and we decided to take some of that money, $70 million, and really bring the lower courts up, or we're breaking it down as it is, $162 for restoration and the $70-$72 to bring the lower courts up to the average, it is an opportunity and it might be the best timing. And otherwise, it's, again, going to be slow and slow to bring up those courts below the average, which is the reason why I would support scenario two. So, again, making sure that everyone who wants to say something has that opportunity. Right now,
May I ask John just one more time, and I know I am absolutely repeating what Judge Thompson said, but I just want to make sure, because I was part of the group that helped write the BCP on the CPI. Trust me, that is something so close to my heart, because I know it's an important way forward for the branch. And I just want to make sure, John, that that is such an important concept, but to me it feels like it's even more of a statewide concept if we're all together on it, meaning, you know, we're at least at the average funding line. But my question is to just make sure I heard you correctly. If we use the $72 million that the governor set as workload, but DOF, because that's how we structured the ask, said, no, it's a cost of doing business, do you believe that if we use the $72 million to bring all the courts up to at least the average funding line, not hurting anyone above it, so we're still going to have courts that are at 100 or above 90, will it hurt our chances for a CPI approach in the future, in your opinion?
That's a tough question, Sherry, and the reason I say that is it depends strategically, if you want to point to this moment in subsequent budget requests to say, fundamentally, the administration went on record with a support for cost of doing business. And as such, we allocated the money in that manner, consistent with the original request. So if that's strategically where folks want to go, there's an opportunity right now to wire it that way, which lends to a permanency conversation down the road, right? Now, so that's the kind of strategic, you know, what conversation do you want to have in the future about this, given finances testimony about the intended use of the funds, which, quite frankly, is you know, they're on record as well for workload. As the governor's budget was released, it's very clear in print on a workload component. So I don't think it precludes an opportunity later to come in and ask again for a CPI adjustment, if that's your question. I think that's
my question, because for me, it once supports the other, because it's easier to then be together, to rise and fall together. So anyway, that I just wanted to make sure I heard what I thought you said to Judge Thompson, which is what you just said. So thank you.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Okay, so we have a recommendation that was passed on Monday. We reconvened with the updated information where the amount that can bring the lower courts up is less than, well, it's 72 and 162. If there is nothing else, if there's no motion or there's nothing else for us to discuss, we can finish or...
So this is Sherry Carter. I am going to make the motion that we accept scenario two that would bring all sister courts up to at least the average funding level. One thing I'd like you to consider before your vote is that if you vote against it and we stay with scenario one, keep in mind that with the allocation as outlined, there will be 10 courts that are below 80%, 23 courts over 90% of funding, with the other 25 between 80 and 90%. So that is still a major spread. When we talk about cost of doing business, imagine how hard it is if you're in the 70% of funding versus in the 80 or the 90% of funding. So anyway, I make the motion to follow scenario two.
And this is Nancy Everhart, I'll second.
So to both of you, we have a gap. We have $72.2 million in the new funding, the amount necessary to bring the courts, all courts up to 80% at least, is less. What does the motion contemplate what to do with that difference of the amount of money?
Oh, I'm sorry. It would be to follow the recommendation that any excess money, because remember, the numbers we're looking at are not final, so we don't really know how this is all going to jive. We're looking at those as proposals, but, yeah, any additional money would then be allocated under the original proposal, which would go to all 58 courts because there would be no more courts under the line.
Okay. I think that clarification is needed just to – so there's a motion and a second. Any discussion? Okay. I think this is one where ayes and nays will be difficult. So, Cottrell, could you do a roll call vote, please?
Okay, give me one moment. Okay, we'll go ahead and start now.
Yes,
Judge please. Buckley, how do you vote?
Yes.
Ms. Fleming, your vote, please.
Yes.
Judge Cope.
No.
Judge Kelly, who is absent today, so there will be no vote for her. Judge Thompson?
Option two, yes.
Ms. Carter?
Yes.
Ms. Everhart?
Yes.
Mr. Planet was also absent for today's call, so we'll skip to Mr. Taniguchi.
No.
And Mr. Yamasaki?
Okay, my count, Cottrell, is 5-3?
That is correct. 5 yeses, 3 noes.
Okay. Is there anything that Cottrell, you or Brandy need to bring this to tick back?
Brandy, any input or additional comments?
Not at the moment. We'll be turning materials around rather quickly because take-back is next week. So Judge Buckley will definitely reach out should we have any other questions. But I think we're good for this meeting.
Okay. Fran, anything?
Nothing further to add. Thank you very much, Judge Buckley.
And John?
Nothing further, and a thank you for the opportunity to address the subcommittee.
Well, and thank you for joining us. It's always invaluable to have your input and knowledge of what's happening. Anything else for today?
No, there's nothing remaining on the calendar for today or the agenda.
Okay. And from any of the members, anything else? Okay. No. Everyone stay safe, and thank you again for being so flexible. Have a good evening.
Thank you.
Good night. Thank you.
The host has left the meeting. So at this time, the meeting will come to an end. Thank you, and goodbye.